you know, all the people that we know that we are good friends with on, you know, in the social media universe or elsewhere, we see everybody else doing the same thing. So we think everybody's doing it. But then you look at the totality of the whatever million mileage plan members that are out there, how many of them are actually doing this reduction?
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, episode 50 episodes we've done now, I suppose when we finish this, we welcome on Joey Redman. Again, Joey, you are our most frequent guest on the podcast. I did the math. You've been on 4 episodes. You've been on 8% of our episodes.
Wow, well, that's pretty exciting, and I'm honored to be back.
The excitement there, I almost feel like we need to we got to try that again. Come on, Joey, 4th episode, you're on the on a milestone episode of 50.
Wow, guys, this has been the most exciting day of my life. I'm just so excited to be here for all 8% of your episodes. Let's go.
There we go.
Much more frenetic.
So we're starting a year out, sort of. We did post an episode, I think, on the 31st or the 1st, but this is our first recorded episode of the new year. It is 2025 now, as whether we want it to be or not. And so I thought we'd start out with just a little bit of a Nostradamus corner. You know, most people sort of start the year out with a resolution. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to fly more first class, you know, whatever. Instead of doing that, I thought, let's make some predictions. It's kind of an interesting year because there's a lot of things kind of out there. And, you know, this is just us kind of throwing stuff at the wall. I don't know the last time we did predictions, but I don't think we have a very high batting average. So treat this more as entertainment than anything else. If it's okay, I'll start out with the one prediction that I think I've seen a lot of places. I don't know that it's my particular prediction, but I think a lot of folks are concerned with an American Airlines devaluation. Yeah, I know.
I'm done.
I mean, I've been sitting on 700,000. I'm starting to redeem them. I mean, you know, they don't earn interest, and you know, the prospect that Citi might be able to transfer to them. I mean, that's a lot of miles pouring into the ecosystem.
It's a good prediction. I can take one. You kind of took mine, but I'm going to modify it. I think there's no way Alaska is still doing 5,000 point, 7,500 point domestic AA flights by the end of the year.
Whoa.
That's an interesting one. And that's a huge one. I have really leveraged that like crazy. I need to do some real-time producing. Because I thought that they made some sort of a deal that they wouldn't devalue their award chart in order to get past that Hawaiian merger.
Sure. They actually talked about that on Dots, Lines, and Destinations too, but I don't think that implies to their partner awards, right? They can't change their chart. They can't devalue Hawaiian's chart, but I don't think what the cost of JAL points is, you know, whatever, relevant to the U.S. government, but, you know, who knows?
It's a good point. You know, it's not their metal that they're messing the monkey with. It's their partner, America.
Part of my question, too, I mean, maybe this is a question for you guys because you guys are far more plane nerds than I am. With Alaska now doing all these things and like starting to fly internationally out of Seattle and all this stuff, like are they really going to be in Oneworld for that much longer? Or is that partnership with them and American really going to stick as they expand and grow?
That is a super, super interesting question.
It still only makes them a one ocean airline. I mean, it's not like they're competing over the Atlantic yet, and they're not going to get enough aircraft, I think, to get that other side. Now they merge with JetBlue, then you got both sides. Then yeah, they're out of Oneworld. I think Alaska can stay in there.
I mean, unless they can somehow get added to the transatlantic joint venture, you know, I mean, like that. Can you even imagine something like that happening?
So they say. DOT's U.S. Department of Transportation's presser says, quote, maintain value of miles. The combined airline must not take any actions that would devalue Hawaiian miles. It actually says Hawaiian miles must maintain the value of each unredeemed Hawaiian mile earned prior to the merger closure, yada, yada, yada. They talk nothing about Alaska miles.
Mm.
So that's interesting. Effectively, they agreed to retain the value for the less, in my opinion, the less impactful mileage program. So yeah, you could interpret that multiple ways. And maybe we should all be booking our 4,500 or 5,000 Alaska short hauls
sooner than later.
Yeah. No, that's a great insight. Did Dotslands talk about that devaluation or just about the spirit of that agreement? Because I haven't heard that episode yet.
I forget what the text was, but I think they were musing about the idea of like, you know, what is Alaska going to change and are things there? And, you know, they were pointing, it's just a real valuable spot. And then I forget, one of the guys was kind of pushing back saying, I don't think they can change the points. And they were being like, well, I don't think that really applies to partners. You know, not the intention of what the DOT was saying. So it's, you know, I'm sure it's a great area, but I also think if I've got to imagine, like, if you think about how unvaluable domestic awards have gotten with everybody else, it just seems like it's so far. You know, I'm just using being in miles and points now for 10 years. It just feels like it's so far off the value spectrum that it's just like, that just seems like the thing that's going to get slashed first. But, you know, it could be around for 10 years, like Turkish to Hawaii made forever.
10 years, it's a return to the Avios, you know, level, mm-hmm. just about, right? I mean, they were 3,500, but, you know, with inflation, you know, 4,500 sounds not bad at all. But that's actually a really good one. I think I just intentionally didn't read as deeply into it because I enjoy that so much. In fact, I just used them to fly down to Florida just before Christmas to see my folks. Wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise. It was, you know, $1,000 for three round trip down to Florida, or it was 27,000 points. I mean, that's...
No brainer.
Yeah, no brainer.
But, you know, it's kind of one of these things where, you know, how niche is it? Because, you know, we've had a couple of guests on where they've kind of talked a little bit about how, you know, for us being so close to it, we think these things are huge. And there's like all of these redemptions happening, right? And then you actually look at what is in totality, what does this mean? You know, how many people are actually redeeming Alaska miles for, you know, these AA awards with short distances? And it may not be a huge number. You know, number one, most of these like short haul things, you know, that it's valuable for, a lot of them are here on the East Coast. There's a lot less representation of your average, you know, consumer being an Alaska Mileage Plan member. Obviously, in points of mouth community, that's very distorted. But, you know, your average person who lives in DC who's flying out of Dulles Airport, how many of them have an Alaska Mileage Plan account? You know?
Well, and that's a good point. I mean, it kind of brings me back to that episode that we had Richard Kerr on. And he said that a very high percentage or a much higher percentage than I expected of BILT members use their BILT points to pay their rent at an incredibly bad ratio. It was not even a penny a point. It was something well below that. So yeah, we think that people are doing what we're doing. And the reality
many
is
many of
is
our
that
peers are doing it, right? You know, all the people that we know that we are good friends with on, you know, in the social media universe or elsewhere, you know, we see everybody else doing the same thing. So we think everybody's doing it. But then you look at the totality of the whatever million mileage plan members that are out there, how many of them are actually doing this redemption?
No, that's an excellent point. Joe, any final thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think that's probably, are we doing more than one prediction or is we just a one and done prediction day over here?
Oh, well, you did and a prediction. Do I have to do a prediction?
Yeah, I would.
I
like
haven't you, given like, a prediction yet.
Yes, please give yours, sir.
There we go. Go for it, TK.
Well, you know, I'm going to kind of go along the lines of my prediction, which I think I've talked about previously, which is I think we're going to see some major innovation in airline elite loyalty programs. And I say that because the main driver of that, at least for me in the past, was I want to get an upgrade. You know, I want to get a domestic upgrade. And when you hear that Delta's only giving out, you know, like what, 11% of their available seats as upgrade? I mean, yeah, I guess if I want to upgrade on, I don't know, DC to Detroit, maybe that's going to move the needle for me. Yeah, great. But the reality is the chances of you getting a DC to Atlanta upgrade, I mean, are probably like minuscule to almost impossible. You know, DC to Minneapolis, or I'm sorry, Atlanta to Minneapolis, some of these hub-to-hub routes, or, you know, whether it be on a Delta or American or whatever, you routinely hear about these like elite upgrade lists with like 58 top-tier elite members on them, right? Let alone, you know, mid-tier type people. I think you're going to start running into this problem where the elite programs and the loyalty programs are going to start having to figure out a new way to motivate people. And so I think we're going to see some innovation in that. It's going to stop being just about domestic upgrades because, again, people are starting to sell those. The other thing that I feel like is a prediction for 2025 is there's still a little bit of a depressed supply story, I think, both for hotels and for airlines. You have not a lot of new builds for hotels, right? You have capital markets where people were used to, you know, being able to invest in properties at, you know, 3-4%, you know, to be able to invest in a brand new real estate development. And suddenly the interest rates are not that low anymore. So you have a little bit of pressure, I think, on new build hotels. And then at the same time, you've got all these manufacturing problems with Airbus, you know, geared turbofans on Pratt & Whitney and, you know, 737 MAX aircraft and 777, you know, everything, anything from Boeing for that matter. So you've got pressure, I think, on supply coming from a bunch of different angles. And then you even have the low-cost carriers, you know, that were kind of nipping at the heels of the majors, like the Spirits and the Frontiers. They're pulling back a little bit because they're trying to be profitable, you know, and one of them being already in bankruptcy. So I think what you're going to see is two things. I think, one, you're going to see elite programs trying to do a little bit of innovation around loyalty because I don't think they're going to have a choice. Otherwise, they're going to have an ecosystem problem where you're not going to start getting these silvers and golds to want to reach up to platinum or whatever if you don't give them something to say, hey, here's something to aspire for. I don't see them getting that as much. And then at the same time, you know, you see that constrained award availability. Suddenly, the whole value proposition, I think, is going to start to break down if they don't try to innovate a little bit.
Do you think that folks like, and I'm just going to use his Twitter handle, Dr. Dute, who's the founder of Loyalty Status Company, he's been featured on View from the Wing. His company is focused on trying to do status matches, right? Trying to help airlines steal loyal customers. Now, obviously, from our perspective, from a travel hacking perspective, you know, to be able to go from an American to a Jordanian Airlines, which is right now, I think, one of the ones that they're highlighting, you know, that can be valuable because you might get lounge access, that sort of thing. You might not get the upgrades. But do you think that's sort of a, you know, a focused business that has been doing a lot of that for probably 3 or 4 years is kind of inflating the ranks? Or do you think that that's, is that part of the problem? Or is that almost the next evolution of status? Meaning you've given up on the upgrades by having status directly with the airline that you're flying, and now you just care about the lounge access and the free bags and whatever other alliance benefits there are.
That's a great question about are the ranks overpopulated? Or do we have too many elites? And I think the short answer is probably yes, because the population of upgrades and award availability has not increased in lockstep with the number of elite members. But I think you're going to probably have the opposite problem at some point. And, you know, when they look at these ecosystems, I'm assuming these loyalty people are looking at how many, you know, silvers they have, how many golds, you know, how many people they have at the different tiers. And you don't have like kind of a healthy, you know, stepping stone of, you know, you've got a lot of silvers and a little bit less golds and even smaller number of platinums or whatever. You know, if you don't have that kind of pattern, then it's probably not a healthy ecosystem. And I don't know. I feel like, again, those kind of limited status match type things, you don't see them as much with the major loyalty programs. They tend to be a little bit more protective. And so I don't see them as a major factor one way or another right now. They could be, you know, there could be a lot more because, you know, and for that matter, you know, if you are disinterested, if we kind of go the European route and we're more about lounge access than we are about upgrades, which is maybe where we're moving toward, maybe that's kind of where suddenly the three major airlines become more similar to Flying Blue and Executive Club, or I'm sorry, not Executive Club anymore, British Airways, whatever they call it now. If we have them moving that way, then maybe we start seeing it more about lounge access and those type of things, and we see a trend toward that. That'll be interesting if that's how it goes, because And then you start asking the question, why am I a U.S. elite member? Why am I not a, you know, a member of one of these alliance partners that have much better benefits than the traditional North American-based programs? Anyway, food for thought.
Interesting. I'll just say, I mean, obviously, this is just very limited data. I flew from PLS to ATL, which is from Turks and Caicos, which we'll talk about later, on a 737-900ER. We flew out F9 empty.
Oh.
I couldn't believe there weren't
90. And I can believe that.
But I'm like, man, there wasn't even someone with a credit card, right? Or like, you know, if you have a reserve card, right, they'll give you status now. So I was just like, man, and the plane was, I mean, it wasn't full, but it was 80-90% full in the back. I was just like, I had never seen such an empty business class on Delta. Interesting coincidence.
Well, I mean, you know, I got to believe that that's vacation travelers. They might just be that one flight a year that they do. And, you know, are you going to have a card if you just do one or two flights a year?
Now, is that a complimentary for SkyMiles? Like if you're SkyMiles Elite, would they do, is it treated as a domestic flight from an upgrade perspective?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm pretty sure. Okay.
Yeah, because that's the only thing that I can think of.
But they consider all of Mexico, too, as like domestic upgrades. I think most of the Caribbean.
So they're not looking.
I think the big exception is they fly lie flat now to like Lima. And so I think that is considered a, you know, anything that's classified flown as Delta 1.
Anything that's Delta 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Having flown that lie flat between Atlanta and Lima, that is a questionable lie flat. I mean, it's the old LATAM A350 that they've been operating where it's like the 222 configuration. I mean, I could talk, and Tom's smiling.
You have no love for LATAM premium class. I mean, you seem to manage to insult it on just about every version of that's available in the world, including the ones that don't even live in the airline anymore.
Well, in all fairness, we were on a LATAM 767 down to Lima from JFK, and that was simply wonderful. The hard product was great. The soft product had left some to be desired, but the hard product was good.
To be fair, you know, the fact that there are still business class seats that are not aisle access, you know, that in 2025 is probably a kind of is definitely a little bit anachronistic for airlines these days.
My God, they're living in the dark ages.
They kind of are.
Well, so I think those are some interesting food. That's some interesting food for thought. You know, some you know, just throwing stuff at the wall of things that, you know, from what we've seen over the years and what we've seen over the last few months, you know, that could come to pass in 2025. Obviously, you know, we hope some of these things don't come to pass, but I think that's an interesting conversation. What I'd like to do is I'd like to kind of shift the focus a little bit, Joey. We were talking just before we started about a little bit of, you know, from a miles and points talk, a topic that Tom and I have been trading messages on, you know, from time to time as well. And I think you coined it sort of points arbitraging for hotels. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. You know, I think it's just been something I've gotten into a lot more. I think in my first, I don't know, call it 6 to 10 years of miles and points, I think I was always of the opinion of if I don't have points, I'm not willing to do it, right? Like I've just, it's got to fit in my points prism. It's got to fit in my points bubble. And one of the things I found is like, you know, in TK bringing up something about how we're losing so much value in a lot of these credit, you know, redemption systems and like, you know, you're spending on your Delta card, you're only 1 mile per point, you know, whatever. And it's like, you're not getting upgrades. You're just, the value chain is shrinking. I've even kind of started pivoting some of my business spend into 2% cards. And I like the BOA. I'm able to get the 2.265, right, with the Platinum Honors bonus. So that's like nice as well. But what I've been finding myself doing with a lot of those cash backs is actually purchasing points. And it's kind of opened me up to like programs like, for example, I have an IHG stay coming up at the Kimpton Kimpton Seafire in Grand Cayman Islands for March. And I'm never going to earn IHG points, right? I mean, they're just, why would you? I mean, at best, you would apply for a card and burn through. But at the same time, it's like I was able to purchase enough points when they were on sale for under, right at $1,800. And it's like, if you convert that from your 2% card, it's like you're doing far better than transferring from Chase. And then if you want to look at it from a direct value, you know, it's it's the Grand Cayman during spring break that, you know, I'm not a big cost per point fan because, you know, if you're not going to pay that, it's not really the cost per point. But I mean, it was $3,500 a night for 5 nights. So, you know, whatever that comes out to, 14, 15,000, and you're literally purchasing it for $1,800 in points. And the thing is too, it's like, yeah, okay, you cancel it and you're stuck with points. But I mean, most of us, I think, travel enough and have enough ways we could figure out, right, to, you can come up with a use. You might have the points for a little bit, but it's not like they're stuck in some unknown currency. So that was like a good example. Thoughts on that? I can share.
I like it. You know, I mean, I feel like you're not the first one that's mentioned kind of like, especially with IHG points, there's definitely that buying points arbitrage kind of opportunity. So I definitely heard some other people espouse that same tactic, you know, for IHG in particular, because they do seem to be very easy. You know, like you're going to, if you don't have enough points, just, you know, you could purchase them right at the point of sale, right, of booking the reservation. You don't even have to necessarily wait for a sale, although obviously waiting for the sale is the more advantageous play.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I actually looked at IHG doing almost the same thing that you did, except probably not at the same scale, when we were gonna when we were doing our European trip, because IHG hotels typically have, they're in the secondary cities, even in the primary cities, they're usually fairly close to city center where you want to be, and having no real status. I might still have something from a status match, but you know, never really accruing points. I was looking at that same approach. I think that approach probably works with some other things. I know that years and years ago, when Life Miles first came on the scene, we were all looking at Life Miles the same way. You know what I mean? Buy them, and that was probably before they were transfer partners from God and everybody. But you know, you could buy those at a reasonable amount, and then you could get a pretty decent redemption from it. So I think that's I really like that idea. And I think probably the most important aspect of that, changing the paradigm at how you think of points and not just thinking about them from a, I'm going to earn it this way, and then, you know, I'm going to get that aspirational, rather looking at, I'm going to stay at this particular location. There's an IHG hotel. I know they sell points at decent value. What's that translation to? In your case, Joey, you got what? 55-56% discount, right? Or no, it was more than that, right? You said, yeah, 3,500?
Almost a night? Yeah, almost like 88% off if you want to look at it from paying full sticker, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have spent that. However, because you were willing to pay money, you said, I can get this for 1,800 instead of paying that whole, what is it, 35,000 or however much it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to look at things outside of the, I'm only going to pay with points.
Yeah,
you know, the free travel thing, I think we're starting to hear a few people that don't, you know, that are not just espousing everything's free. This is discounted travel. Even if we just use purely points, we still paid something. There was still an opportunity cost for those points.
Well, and the point that I would make is, you know, we talk about hub captives from an airplane perspective, you know, like how, you know, being close to Atlanta or Detroit or Minneapolis or something like that, where you're near a fortress hub, you know, you have people who tend to always have it to look at Delta because of kind of, you know, the convenience and the vicinity. I'd say a lot of miles and points people have become Hyatt captives, you know, in that they're always looking at, you know, hey, where can World of Hyatt take me? And I'm going to be, you know, sole sourcing my hotels from Hyatt. I mean, I'm probably guilty of that as about as anybody. But, you know, the reality is the world is big. Hospitality and hotels are big. And there's a lot of different options and a lot of different chains, a lot of big chains. You know, we have blind spots too, whether it be Choice or Wyndham or even some of these other weird loyalty programs like that Dia was mentioning during the Festivus episode, you know, the one about Expedia, you know, and the fact that there's the One Key or program and some other things that are out there that still provide some level of loyalty or cashback or whatever that, you know, sometimes people have a blind spot to because it's not Hilton or Hyatt or Marriott, you know. So it's good to kind of have these kind of thought exercise. I definitely would recommend listeners, you know, don't limit yourself just to kind of like the troika of like, you know, Hyatt, Marriott, and Hilton, right?
Yeah, and another thing too, like Trevor bringing up staying in IHG in Europe, really reminded me of another valuable IHG hack, so to speak, or I think an IHG benefit you can purchase that a lot of people forget about is ambassador status. And I'll tell you why I have a great use case for ambassador status. A, I found through, I think it was thanks to Ben over at 1 Mile at a Time, he provides a link where you can actually search if you had purchased the IHG ambassador certificate to see all the room stays that are eligible, but without having to purchase it yet. And so if you purchase it, it instantly goes into your account. And I would have never messed with it, but what I learned is that you buy 1 weekend night, you get 1 weekend night free. A lot of these hotels in Europe have no restriction on what room type to do it with. So all of a sudden, I was staying at the Continental in Porto, Portugal, and I was there 3 nights. And all of a sudden it was like, well, I paid whatever, $200 for ambassador status. You get $75 back in your day credit. So it's really like a net 125. But I ended up booking like the room right below the penthouse. I booked a 2-story suite that was $600 a night. So I really got for $725 for 2 nights. And then for my third night, I used my MX Delta 250 credit, right, to bring the cost down a little bit in the room. So I was there for 3 nights for $1,000 in a suite that cost, you know, whatever, 800 something, $700 a night. And so it's like you start piecing together some of these ideas, but you're also just willing to spend a little bit of cash. An issue too, like Trevor probably runs into, is most hotels in Europe, you can't book a base room anyway with a kid, right? Because every, you know, it's like in Europe, they'll literally have suites that are occupancy too. It's like a 900 square foot suite and they're like occupancy max two. And it's like, but that becomes problematic with this, right? So it was just another nice cheat around the system, or a hack, so to speak, that does cost money. I feel like people can talk about that status, but it's useful.
I mean, you can buy the ambassador status with points too, if you really care that much about it, but probably not a good redemption.
Yeah, it's not good redemption value, but I think it's 40,000 points. So it's half cent. So it's exactly what you buy points at.
What did you think of, did you end up getting a club? Did the Porto location also have a club lounge? Were you able to get lounge access?
It did not, but they provided like a free drink certificate.
Okay. Yeah, because that's the one thing that I've always wondered about with the ambassador program, because I you know, you read some posts here and there, and you hear about people really kind of complaining about the value of that, especially in the domestic U.S., because fewer and fewer intercontinentals seem to be actually maintained. I mean, actually, it seems to be a problem with most hotel chains where, you know, an executive lounge of some sort in the United States or North America appears to be a very much an endangered species, right? How many Hyatt Regencies that might have used to have a lounge or even some Grand Hyatts no longer have them, right? And let alone Intercontinentals or other hotel chains.
Yeah, it's a shame on the lounge front. But I mean, you know, there's a silver lining. It's forcing us out. It's forcing us to enjoy the destinations that we're going to. You know, I know I'm guilty of, you know, touring for the day and then just hanging out.
I'm an enabler
until the evening. Yes, 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 sir.
Not only have we been guilty of going to lounges, I think we've been guilty of closing lounges down. I think that's probably the more. I don't think we've been to a lounge where we haven't closed down the lounge. But anyway, well,
certainly not in 2024. Maybe the day that we flew out of Bogota, but that was because we had to catch a flight.
But you know, we had done it the previous night, so you know it still counts.
There you go. There you go. Yes. Yes. Okay. Let's shift gears. I mean, I love that conversation. I think that's a lot of food for thought, especially as we're in January, we're starting to, you know, think about kind of, you know, holiday travel in another, what, month, give or take, starting to think about, you know, right now we could be thinking about Christmas markets in Europe. We could be thinking about summer travel that might be a little dicier, trying to book it.
Well, spring break with the elevated hotel prices and flight prices, I guess, from your peak spring break time period.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of thinking that can be, you know, that this can be applied to. So, Joey, thank you for that. That's absolutely awesome. So, thinking about not the trips in the future, but a trip that you took recently, you went to Turks and Caicos. And I have to be honest, I don't do a lot of the Bahamas or Caribbean. I mean, I've done Punta Cana, I've done, you know, cruises, but I think I've only stayed in like Punta Cana, Grand Bahamas, and Jamaica. Like, so I don't have a wide breadth of experience. Oh, Puerto Rico, yes, of some of the islands and actually staying on the island. And so I'm really excited to hear. So you stayed at an SLH property. So SLH, now affiliated with Hilton, used to be Hyatt. Tell us about, I guess, number one, the property, and then maybe after that, we can talk about sort of the experience of staying at an SLH property as a Hilton versus, I know that you've stayed at many as a Hyatt, back when it was part of the Hyatt network.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely don't fancy myself like a Caribbean enthusiast, but I do seem to be going there a lot. Sadly, our friend Jeff, who has been on this podcast before when we talked about our trip around the world, shout out a couple episodes ago, has taken me to some awful places in the Caribbean, like St. Croix. However, Turks and Caicos is in my more favorite places in the Caribbean. So that's, you know, a good speaking of there. Turks and Caicos is a really interesting country. First off, before I dig into this hotel, it is a British overseas territory, and they drive on the British side of the road. And then everything else about Turks and Caicos is essentially American. They use American power plugs. They use American dollars. They use miles. Everything, you know, kind of functions in an American way. It's a very clean island. It's very well lit, which I have not found in the Caribbean or most islands. Like, they had streetlights on all of our roads, even the road to our resort. So I liked Turks and Caicos. I will tell you, it is probably the worst airport I've ever been to outside of Africa in my life. So keep that in mind.
I don't think you've flown to enough Caribbean islands. How about, let's just say that they're probably in their peer group when it comes to airports, because I've had some horrible times at like Aruba Airport, at like St. Martin and other places. So they're not all wonderful either, the other islands.
I agree with you. The bar for Caribbean airports is really low. I think my issue in Turks is it's grown so much. It was the first time I've ever walked into an airport terminal. We went through customs, and there was literally not a seat open to sit. Because it's like six gates in about 1,000 square feet. There was a Delta flight that was delayed. There was like a flight to Newark, a flight to, you know, whatever. There was a JetBlue flight to JFK, a AA flight to Miami. It was just crazy. Like, I just want to sit down. You know, I don't need lounges, food, any of those things. Like, those aren't essential. I would like all of them, but it's like I can live without them. But I was like, I need a place to sit, you know? And I was like, we got there an hour and a half early because you never know how slow baggage and customs is going to be. Which, top tip, I will have them put a link in the description, or you can message me and I will get it to you. But you can pay. There's a fast track. It's about $40 US a person, and it will take you through the line. So if you don't want to get to the airport early, they essentially have like a paid fast track service, and there's people standing
right there. Oh my gosh.
And they just walk you.
That might definitely be worth it for some of these Caribbean airports.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there was an option at SeaTac, you know, because I think I have the same problem at SeaTac where, you know, there's not a place to sit. So let's just say, you know, there's the Caribbean of the Northwest US as well. So anyway.
and I love that one because it's just like we like to say, there are times when you want to trade money for your time. And that fast track, I mean, especially when you're going to have such a poor experience in the airport, that's money well spent. More time in paradise.
Agreed. So I ended up staying here for 5 nights. It was 520,000 Hilton points, which
sounds really impressive.
Yeah, it seems steep, but the nightly rate when I stayed there was about $6,400 a night. So we were,
woohoo.
And now mind you, I was there for Christmas, right? So that's a hugely inflated bill.
Elevated, a little bit of an inflated time.
I would say I went through the calendar before this podcast to look. It's about an average price of $1,800 to $2,200 a night. So, you know, once again, if you even want to bring in purchasing points, 520,000 points, you can always buy Hilton on sale right at a half cent. Again, I mean, you're only talking $5,200 for 5 nights. So when the average room rate is $1,800, $2,000, you know, still almost half price, right? It's not as good of a deal we talked about with IHG, but it's just another way where you're like, I can't stay at this hotel. I don't have, you know, 500,000 Hilton points. Here's what I think is the most special thing about this hotel. The base standard room in this hotel is a 2-bedroom, 1,700 square foot boathouse. And Trevor's going to love this. Every standard room comes with a boat dock where you can dock a 26-foot boat. So each little boathouse has its own private dock. So that's pretty exciting. And they're all 2-bed, 2.5 bath. So I think the goal is find some rich family members that'll fork 5K, tell them you'll cover the other 5K, buy it with points, and go for free.
Well, and not only that, I took a look at your walkthrough of the property and also of the villa. Mm-hmm. You call it a villa that you had, and that rooftop experience. I mean, a barbecue up there, beautiful view, a lot of comfortable outdoor space. I mean, it's not just the experience of, you know, you've got a room, you've got a residence. And I think that's pretty awesome when you think about just you know, the opportunities that you could do. You could try to do a family trip. You could do multiple families and really have a lot of fun space without having to, you know, just go out the whole time. I mean, if you want to be able to cook, if you want to be able to just sit around and drink and enjoy the view, the experience.
What is the occupancy on one of those standard 2-bedroom units? Is it 4 people, 4 adults and some number of children, or what could you normally get away with as far as number of people in there?
So I did not push my luck with it. I was able to do 3 adults and 1 child because that's what we had, and it took it okay. Admittedly, I did do a bunch of research on how far you could go with it, which is probably my fault. So someone probably can do that and see. But I also find in the Caribbean, they're not nearly as tight, right, with some of those occupants.
Maybe like
a lot of other
places.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I think if you showed up with 4 adults and 2 kids, I don't think they're going to tell you can't stay there. Don't hold me to that. But, you know, obviously from.
Sounds like a reasonable number of people.
Yeah. Obviously from like a square footage fire issue, you know, it's not there. Now, let me do 2 things. I'm going to talk about a problem I see with this property, and then I'm going to talk about all the things I like about this property. So funny you mentioned that it's a residential experience. They are actually owned homes. Like, people have purchased these and they're renting them through this SLH property. One concern I have, which I would say if you like this property and it sounds interesting, head over to our YouTube and you see I did like a 30-minute walk through the property, 2-3 minute walk through the room. I would say book it soon. Now, I have no inside info. I don't know anything, but the way my math in my head works is like, I found the people purchased this home for just over $2 million, this boathouse that we stayed in, that they referred to it as. And I'm guessing they probably have HOA fees of, you know, $1,000, $2,000 a month. So part of me is like, what can Hilton be paying them, even at 500,000 Hilton points, where it makes sense for them to be renting this to us? And like, part of me thinks that if they start getting a lot of Hilton rentals, are these owners not going to be like, don't put my property on there? You know, I don't want all this wear and tear for minimal pay, right? So, you know, maybe SLH has a different deal. Maybe it's not. But I feel like it's in staying there and having that experience and being like, wow, I paid a standard room rate and I have a 2,000 square foot home. You know, I can bring extended family. I can have my kids. They gave everybody, it seemed like if you stay in one of those homes, it's just standard that everyone gets free breakfast too. So they weren't like, hey, you only have 2 adults, whatever. Like, the breakfast menu didn't even have prices on it. So no one suggested a price. There didn't seem to be a price. There were people with 14 people staying at some of these homes, and I noticed their receipt was also zero. I was a little snoopy. So it just seems to me like it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes when you're doing something in miles and points, and you're like, man, this is a little too good to be true. So I don't want to fearmonger or scare you, but if you're like, this sounds really great, you know, I can bring my aunt and uncle that I never come, or my grandparents or whatever, I would try and book it sooner than later. Cause I just, if something were to get chopped, I think this would be an easy thing. But, you know, who knows? Some of this stuff hangs around for a long time.
Well, my experience is with these kind of like, you know, owner owned, you know, but rented to a hotel kind of situations, they have a tendency to get reflagged very much more easily. Mm-hmm. Because that's what I seem to, because, you know, this type of setup is pretty common in these kind of Florida, you know, Caribbean type areas. And I've seen these type of properties come and go between different chains very, very quickly. So that's the other reason, you know, and quite honestly, it just happened, right? Because, you know, you had SLH be part of Hyatt, and then suddenly now it's Hilton. And that was like, you know, in the course of 12 months. So that's the kind of stuff you're right to say that there's probably a higher likelihood of a change in this kind of environment than you might have in a traditional, you know, corporate owned hotel that doesn't have any residences or any private ownership
of it. Yeah, exactly. So digging into the property, there's 2,200 feet of oceanfront. It's not now. One of the downsides as well to the property is when you picture Turks and Caicos beaches and all the glorious, glamorous, clear Long Beach with clear water. The issue here is that is all on the north side of the island, and this is on the south side of the island. Now, this property is owned by Grace Bay Resorts, and they have four or five resorts on the island. And by staying at South Bank, they will give you access to all the amenities at the other hotels. So like we went and did a day at Grace Bay, got to do the like traditional Turks Beach that you imagine. We did some restaurants there, pools. You're supposed to be able to bill everything to your room at South Bank. Our server was a little, I gave up. I was just like, here's my credit card guy. I just need my 26 Hilton points that bad. But in theory, I'm sure over time, they'll figure that out more and get more adjusted to that. So that is interesting. They'll take you in a shuttle to Grace Bay Resorts too. I would highly recommend having a car there. It's not hard driving there, but that's another, you know, we don't need to get that in depth on this show. It's 92 rental properties in total. I think the two bedroom boathouses, which is the standard rooms, I think there's somewhere my guess was between 10 and 15 of them on the property. So something to keep in mind when you're booking and like looking for space. I don't know if they're all available, but I kind of, there's only two bedroom and three bedrooms and there's five buildings. So I kind of went through and did some rough math guessing. So that is the standard rooms. I think the big highlight of the property is they've dug out. So it's by the marina. So if you're a boat nerd like Trevor, you're going to see boats coming in and out. You've got your own dock. Some of the marina dock is integrated into the hotel, which is kind of cool. They have like a concierge dock for people staying there. But next to the marina, they've dug out a huge 5-acre man-made lagoon, essentially, that's kind of reefed off by all the buildings and part of the marina. It's about 4.5 feet deep, they said. I didn't go test it, but it's really pretty. They have these like Maldives, like open walkways through there. There were tons of turtles and fish life already in there. And then they've got paddle boards and kayaks you can rent. It's a really cool setup. Like that's where we spent most of our time. They've got a bar and everything there. The water was really clear.
Did you go swimming in that marina?
You could. There were people doing it. My daughter got in there. But I mean, the water temp on my Apple Watch was about 78 degrees. So it was like 10 degrees
kind of cold. Chilly.
Yeah, 10 degrees colder than what I wanted to be swimming in. So I put my feet in. I will say the one downside is like the sand is real. I don't know. It's not like the best sand in the world. It's definitely not the worst sand, but it's whatever. It's just like, I feel like it's got like
reclaimed sand or something and not kind of like super fine beachy sand.
Yeah. I'm assuming at some point they would bring sand in, but I don't know. But there's a lot of like little rocks and stuff in it, which I don't know over time it might, you know, get better. Definitely when we went to the north side of the island at their other property, that beach sand was like amazing. And this was like, you're like stepping on some little rocks and things. And it wasn't bad sand, but it's certainly not like out of this world. It was a really great experience. The food and beverage was amazing. I mean, this property has only been open 6 weeks. And so I had pretty low expectations. The breakfast buffet was really good. We ate at their restaurant. It's only one restaurant on property called Lua. It was really good. And then interestingly, it's probably the best service I've ever had in the Caribbean. They were really well trained. Everyone there was really on top of everything. Interestingly, like they had even a lot of the front facing, like we had essentially, I mean, they called it like a butler, but it was really like someone you could text and interact with. Like he was clearly brought in from Southeast Asia. And there were a couple of like the front facing service people that were also Southeast Asian. So I thought that was kind of unique for the Caribbean that I had not experienced at hotels before. And it really had a good culture and vibe behind everything. But, you know, basically for $2,000 a night. So I think expectations of most of their cash clientele is also probably pretty high.
Right. So it's probably some service standards that people are expecting at that price point. I was interested, like, how was the SLH experience itself? Because, you know, I think we were chatting a little earlier that it's kind of been in the social media ecosphere, right? That SLH doesn't always really care or treat Hilton Diamond members in any particular, with any particular special treatment or anything like that. But it sounds like maybe the standard treatment of a regular guest there is already pretty high. So you, maybe having additional elite recognition is really not such a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, what can you really expect? I guess for me, maybe my expectations are just permanently too low, but the property, like I said, provided free breakfast standard for everybody. And then I wasn't really anticipating any kind of upgrade. So
right.
I don't know what else there was. I mean, we did have a bottle of Prosecco as a welcome amenity. They gave my daughter a little doll that was like handmade on the island that like told the history of Turks and Caicos, which was kind of cool. And like I said, there were a lot of touch points that I felt were really luxury, right? And very high end where it's, you know, meeting its cost structure. So I don't think if I was a Hilton Gold or if I was a Hilton base member, anything would have been different or better in my experience. And I kind of felt that way with SLH and Hyatt too. Like we stayed at some properties where I had a lady who told me they had never booked a Hyatt guest before. So like she was just like, oh, you get free breakfast from this Hyatt thing. And she's like, I don't think I've ever seen somebody book from Hyatt before. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, so, but same thing. I don't think it's quite the standard, but I've never been to an SLH property that didn't provide free breakfast in a welcome amenity. And so I almost, you know, it seems like they almost provide travel agent like benefits to SLH members that are coming through these different portals versus like caring about someone's status in a way.
I think it's a good thing for people to calibrate their expectations, you know, with these kind of boutique, you know, kind of membership platform kind of properties, right? Like whether it be SLH or preferred hotels or small luxury hotels, you know, the world or leading hotels of the world. There's all of these different smaller alliances, you know, that are not as tight as a corporate owned, you know, franchise kind of Hyatt Hilton kind of network. So when you kind of engage with some of these smaller properties where, you know, the number of people who are coming on a points redemption are probably very minuscule, you know? And so I think it's important that people calibrate their expectations, not think, hey, you might be used to a certain level of recognition at a corporate owned hotel. You're not going to get that at an SLH. You're not going to necessarily get that at a, you know, one of these other kind of alliance or affiliated kind of hotels.
An interesting point and something, you know, I just booked somebody on a cash rate at a SLH hotel in Athens, Greece. It's called A77 Suites, which if you're in the market for Greece, it actually looks pretty interesting. Although if you've got Marriott points, I would steer towards some of the Marriott's look really nice there. However, the A77 Suites hotel is like a 17-room hotel. Right. So like wow. When you think about some of these SLH hotels, it's like, what do you think they can give you? You know what I mean? Like,
right, exactly.
It's basically a big townhouse, you know, at 17 rooms versus like a mega hotel. So you are getting the boutique experience, but I also think you need to realize like a lot of these hotels are either family run, you know, individual
right.
owned run. You know, you're almost like you're a step above a bed and breakfast and a huge step below corporate,
you know, 1,000-room hotel.
Yeah, private equity conglomerate, you know, VIP rooms reservation manager, yada 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 yada, going down the list.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, travel agents, I think in that kind of world, in that class of hotel where you're dealing with 50 rooms, under 100 rooms, something like that, what the travel agent can kind of set up for you, whether it be, you know, some type of property credit or some sort of welcome amenity or some other kind of thing, is probably just as valuable, if not more valuable, than any kind of elite status you might hold. Because that's probably something they're going to look for, or they're more trained to look for, hear the notes on the reservation where the travel agent has arranged for the following benefits, and that those are going to be the things that they're probably more used to dealing with than any kind of elite level recognition.
So all really, really good cautionary tales. I mean, it sounds like they market it as, hey, it's just another property that you can stay at. I know that Hyatt put a lot of disclaimers of, you know, the breakfasts, the charging of additional people in the rooms, that sort of thing. I don't know if Hilton's doing the same. You know, definitely do your research on this one if you're going to stay at SLH's. That said, Joey, I know that, you know, we've already established that you like your SLH hotels. What are the interesting ones that you're looking at for future stays or that you're tracking as new and interesting hotels?
So I've got a list of some that I want to stay at. Before I give you that, however, I want to tell you about a SLH hotel I stayed at when it was in Hyatt. I haven't checked to verify it's in Hilton, but I'm pretty sure it is. It's called the Rosa Perta Spa Resort. It is in Cortina, Italy. And as much as I think Italy is like, you know, obviously international traveler 101, right? Like everyone wants to go to Italy. Everyone's been to Italy. I think Cortina might be the most underrated part of Italy. And I did it on a really long road trip 2 summers ago. And I think it's my favorite place in Italy. It's almost like an Aspen of the Alps a little bit, where it's this very tucked away town that's to be very affluent in all of the food.
So northern Italy, right?
Yeah, it's Italian Alps. So, and you've got it's on the backdrop of the Dolomites. But I mean, to tell you how wealthy relative the area is, they're building an Aman there now, an Aman ski resort. So, I mean, it's on the upper crust. The Winter Olympics are going to be there soon. So I don't know if it's really that secret of a spot I'm giving away. But that was one of my favorite SLH hotels. That was the lady who told me that no one had booked with Hyatt, which sounds crazy. But also keep in mind, it's a 33-room hotel, once again. So it's like, these aren't mega, you know, properties in any way. But I really loved, same thing. I love the food there. It's a little out of town, but you have this gorgeous view of the mountains. If you're ever on my Instagram, like there's like cows that live behind the hotel. Photos of my daughter like scooting around behind these cows with the gorgeous Dolomites in the back. It's a fun place that I think SLH Points makes accessible with points, and there's not really any other chain of hotels there that you can stay on points. And so I think, once again, like in our Miles and Points community, I think it's a place that's ignored. And I imagine that you could probably fly into Milan or Venice, go and stay here, and probably ski for a long weekend cheaper than you can in most places in America with the, you know, prices that skiing costs. So it's just something to think about, throw out there. Some SLH properties I think are really interesting are the Grand Hotel properties. There's one, Tremezzo and Lake Como, which I think Nick from Frequent Miler talks about ad nauseum. There's the one on Lake Garda, which it's like the alternative to Lake Como. It's a little more locals. It's a bigger lake, but it doesn't have all the big chains and hubbub if you want to be a little more low-key. Topping Rose House, which is in the United States, Hamptons. But that's like another place that's not very accessible by points. And I've always kind of wanted to fancy myself a Hamptons person, at least for a weekend. So like that's another cool. And it's like a converted mansion into a hotel. So I always find that's where I really appreciate some of the SLH stuff. It's, you know, every new hotel looks the exact same, right? It's like glass, gray carpet. So it's nice to try different stuff. What are you saying, Trevor?
As a Long Islander, pack the golf shirts.
Okay, I can bring some.
For the Hamptons.
Good. I want to fit in. Maybe you can join me.
Hey, I'd love it. I love getting over to Tate's Bakery. You see Tate's in Costco and stuff nowadays. It used to be Catherine's Bakery, and it was just simply fantastic. The bread, the cookies, everything. No, there's a lot of great stuff out in the Hamptons. I highly recommend you making it out there. You could even take Blade out there, I think. You'll save a whole lot of time on traffic.
Maybe we can do a Blade trip together. I think 6 passengers is the buyout.
I'm all for it. I've never actually done Blade. I've wanted to. I've got a little bit of FOMO, I'll be honest with you, but I don't go to New York enough.
Well, since our guys trip isn't going well, maybe then we can pivot and just all Blade it to the Hamptons.
That might be a little easier to plan, you know. We might not hit multiple continents, but we're definitely going to hit multiple islands.
There you go. Portofino is another place that I think is some great SLH value, the 8 hotel there. But one of the reasons I like identifying value with SLH too is it's like, where can I spend points where I couldn't spend points without, right? And Portofino is another place where it's like, there's not a Hampton Inn, there's not a Holiday Inn Express, there's not a Wyndham. So it's like, that's another great place if you're planning to go, you want to try and utilize points. 8 hotels, like right in the middle of everything. The Nobu hotel chain, which are pretty high-end hotels, have been added into SLH now. So there's Marrakesh, there's San Sebastian, Spain. They've got some interesting properties and some interesting places to consider as well. Arctic Bath looks really cool in Sweden, which is another place where I think, you know, I can't remember who it was from Milenomics did that whole podcast on Sweden and Norway now, which was a great podcast, which inspired trip planning for me, I will say. But, you know, he was pointing out with, you know, once you leave Choice and Strawberry and all those points, it's kind of difficult. And that looks like a really cool property to stay in as well.
Remind me again, can you use any of your like uncapped certs on any of these SLH properties, or is that something that's not, that you can't use?
Yeah, as of right now, Hilton certs are free as long as they're standard, you know, in the standard award points frame of under 150,000 points and they're standard. Yeah, you can use them for SLH properties.
Got it. So, but there is a cap. So it's under 150K.
Well, I think that's the highest standard points now, right? Because they just raised it on a few properties. Oh, okay. So yeah, as long as it is listed as a standard, I forget the actual verbiage on the Hilton site, right? Standard award or standard room versus premium. As of right now, you can use
it. It sounds like these sounds like good options for that too. So if you've earned quite a few of those through some of the credit cards or whatever, this might be another way to utilize some of those. If you're not going to Cabo to stay at the Waldorf Astoria, which every, you know, person and their brother is doing, then yeah, you can look at some of these as an alternative.
Which I have to say, I went in June for the first time. I ran into Trevor's friend that he introduced me to at the Waldorf Astoria in Cabo.
Oh, who did you run into?
Oh, our friend, both of our friends.
Oh, sorry, Jen. Both of your friends.
Yeah, oh, Jen. Okay, Jen was
truly
there.
A
okay.
Friend of the show.
Yes, hello,
yeah,
Jen.
And a friend of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. We've become friends on Facebook. We trade messages, which is funny. But I have to say that it's probably it's my favorite property in North America. I think unlike the Park Hyatt Vendome, I think Waldorf Astoria Cabo is worth the hype.
Wow, that's pretty high praise.
One of these days. So Joey, I think we covered a lot of different topics. But one of the other things that I'm personally excited about, and I know you're excited about it too. I've been following your new initiative, and I know that I've enjoyed some of the stuff that you've been putting out. Why don't you tell our listeners about that new initiative and where they can find
you? Sure. So Jamie Haas, for some of you know, he's also Miles and Points adjacent or involved, and myself started a podcast called Travel Bros Pod. And sadly, for some of you Miles and Points people, it is more of a cash-focused hotel podcast. However, there's a lot of crossover, and I think, you know, I would love for you to listen and come enjoy, even if you're not willing to spend cash. I think you can still get a lot of value. For example, we have a full hour podcast coming out about South Bank, and then in addition on our YouTube, same Travel Bros Pod, I did a, like you said, Trevor, I think you I did a 30-plus minute property tour where I literally walked every part of the property, went into the gym, through the restaurants, the boat docks, to the beach. You can see everything. So if you're like, man, what's going on at this property? We got you covered.
I will say your level of detail is excellent. And, you know, the comprehensive nature of your reviews is probably far, far higher, you know, in content than you would probably see your typical review or walkthrough or trip report. It's just, I think you guys go into a level of detail that's really, really very comprehensive.
Well, Jamie has been a travel agent, I think, now for over 5 years, and he's kind of gotten me into that space as well. So one of the angles of the show and the podcast and the idea is, A, to show that we have authority and knowledge as agents, and then B, kind of as an advertisement for booking. So I do think that is one of the intentions. What we found is, like, I love hotel reviews, and like you guys, when you guys start getting into hotels you've stayed in, or even a good example is like on Miles Per Day. I think we're shouting out every Miles and Points podcast over here throughout. You do a shot for every to bring up some other podcast. But like, you know, Richard Kerr stayed at the Aman and Turks and Caicos. And like even just him talking about his version of that in details, I just love. But I feel like there's not a lot of hotel dedicated podcast. And honestly, I love hotels as much as Trevor loves Lufthansa First Class. So I just wanted to be able to share my love of hotels.
Drink time.
Share my drink love time. Of hotels as much as Trevor shares his love of Lufthansa First Class. So,
and I love that because the reality is we spend, you know, 10, 12, probably no more than 19 hours in an aircraft at a given time. And I know that I spend a ton of time researching that stuff, you know, right down to the food, the menu, the seat, the in-flight entertainment. And I think that you're right. There is a gap on hotels. The challenge is that there's just so many more hotels out there. You probably won't get to more than, you know, a couple of percentage points of hotels, but I think that's an exciting effort. And I know that just having watched the Turks and Caicos walkthroughs and stuff, I mean, you really are going to that level of detail. And I could definitely see, I was watching it, definitely seeing myself trying to make it to that hotel at some point. Again, I'm not a big Caribbean fan. You know, I generally only do that on cruises, but I could definitely see myself getting there. I'm really excited for what, you know, for some of the next hotels that you make it to.
The other thing is, it seems like you focus on the, like, not so commodity hotels, you know, like you were saying, you know, a lot of the hotels that you see coming out of the, you know, the main chains, you know, they're really, you know, they're kind of selling the consistency, right? That a Marriott in Bangkok is not really that different than a Marriott in Dubuque. But at the same time, you know, you're focusing on properties that really have probably a little bit more differentiation or charm, just because they are more distinctive or unique. And that seems to be where your focus area seems to be, at least from the couple of episodes that I've watched and consumed from the Travel Bros podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we're going to wind up staying at some of these, you know, more boring, basic luxury city hotels, right? Because everyone winds up at them at some point. But, you know, really the origin is, what properties do I want to stay at? Where do I want to go on vacation? I mean, that's kind of the origin of what's getting picked. So what does excite me generally is non-traditional hotels or non-traditional new hotels. Because it's like, you know, you stayed in one newly built, you know, Ritz-Carlton, Thompson, whatever, full glass windows. You know, you've kind of stayed in them all, right? There's not that much differentiation other than service, the colors, some things. So that has been one big focus of mine, is just like, you know, trying to focus on more unique properties and interesting hotels. And that's one of the reasons we talked about SLH so much, because that's like a good way for me to cash arbitrage some of those opportunities, right? Because a lot of these unique hotels wind up in hard to get places, expensive places, or become super expensive. With that said, I got two last things. Sorry, we're going long here, I know.
Before we go to the social media aspect. So that's a really great point. And it's an area that I'm trying to kind of push myself out of my comfort zone. That is, trying to avoid the cookie cutter type chain hotels. I, for one, am a willing captive in the smallest hotel footprint fortress of the world, that is Hyatt. But even with a trip that now we've shelved, the family was going to go to Morocco for Martin Luther King Jr. week. We were going to take a week there. And through my research, it was very clear, yes, there's a Park Hyatt in Marrakesh. I'm sure it's beautiful. We were going to spend a night there just to acclimate. But when we were going to really see Marrakesh, we were going to stay in a Riad, because that was the standard. And these Riads are guest houses, a few, probably less than a dozen rooms. And I was really excited about that. It takes so much more research to be able to do that, though. In some cases, at the rapidness of my travel, I don't always have the opportunity to do that, which is probably a personal challenge. But I do love that idea of getting out of the cookie cutter approach. These riads look awesome if anybody's looking at going to Marrakesh. And what I'd ask is do you have any tips or tricks to try to look at, other than SLH, which is like a force multiplier, really, because it's already pre-screened, right? Any other sort of tips and tricks that you use to try to look for those kind of unique hotels?
Yeah, I think even like the Choice, you know, partnership with Leading Hotels of the World is another good angle, right? Or Preferred Hotels. I think there's some great properties in there. Now, mind you, I haven't actually tried to book one, and it sounds like it could be a bit more difficult than you would hope. I've got my eye on a few, like Hotel Emma is one in San Antonio, Texas, which I think I've heard is the best hotel in Texas, and I would like to verify. It's up Trevor's Alley. It's built in an old brewery. That's pretty cool. You know, how many times have you slept in a brewery hotel? Probably zero. It's kind of on the river.
I mean, I kind of hope zero, but.
And I think that's the same thing. And honestly, you know, don't be afraid to get into Google Hotels and just, you know, look for things that aren't in any network or any group. You know, just use the same logic you would to verify everything else these days. Like, go read the bad reviews, look at some of the good reviews, look at pictures, go find some user generated content and see. I mean, the nice thing on social media now is, I mean, you can put, you know, it's so easy to find stuff that's not curated by the hotel, right? Like, you can put any hotel on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, find people who are at least like self-aggrandizing themselves in the hotel and look around the room and kind of figure, you know, things out in that sense. So there's so much information out there. I think if you just spend a little bit of time, I think you can find unique and interesting hotels for sure.
So Joey, are you and Jamie part of like Virtuoso? Are you guys Virtuoso agents?
Yeah. So we would be Virtuoso, Four Seasons Preferred Partner, Rosewood Elite, you know, and then direct with like Preve, in pretty much all the standard properties through. Like I said, Jamie's been doing it a long, long time. I'm just getting my feet wet and learning. But, you know, as a team, well,
and, we're very and good. And I find that, you know, one of the things that I saw you sneak that in there. That was not what I was expecting to hear. I was just going to point out that, you know, Virtuoso, you know, is another area where, you know, you have a lot of independent hotels mm-hmm. that are part of Virtuoso that are not part of what, like, Preferred Hotels or one of these other alliances, but they tend to have a little bit of the people who are members of Virtuoso tend to be a little bit of a higher echelon of standard in terms of, and they tend to be a little bit larger. Like I said, so as far as luxury hotels go, you're probably going to see fewer of those like 33 room hotels, but you're going to see more of those 100 or 200 room hotels, but definitely not these like 1000, you know, convention type of hotels that are part of Virtuoso. But that's another place to look just because the defined benefits are a little bit more clear. You know, like usually it is $100 property credit. It's free breakfast. It's free internet, you know, 4 p.m. checkout. Like the things that you're used to for FHR, they really do also convey typically to a Virtuoso, a hotel stay as well, which I think is another place where it's underutilized by most people. Most people aren't looking at Virtuoso, but they probably should, you know, especially if you're used to, you know, getting the deal that you might get at an FHR, you know, using your Amex Platinum or something. It's really the same thing. It's just you're going through a travel agent instead of Amex Travel.
And in some cases, when you have an actual person travel agent, you'll get a better experience. I mean, Michael Traeger has shared that on a previous episode. I think Spencer Howard has shared that on a previous episode. You know, obviously, you've had similar experiences, Joey. I'll say it this way. Once you've exhausted your Amex hotel credits, there's probably zero reason that you want to use FHR versus going through a travel agent. I mean, unless you're going to try to pay with points, I just don't think you're going to get a lot of value, or you're going to get as much value as going through a travel advisor. I think that's what you call what you guys call yourselves
that is,
nowadays.
That is the fancier, you know, more handsome way to say it, right?
I think travel advisor, travel agent. I mean, I don't think you're going to call me anything like a stewardess or something offensive in that nature. So I think we're safe there.
So, Joey, before we close things out, tell us the social media piece that you wanted to share and how our listeners can find
you. Okay, I got one more thing before this real quick, before we close out this show. I need help from all these listeners because I know there are some people that listen to this podcast that are travel nerds beyond my comprehension or maybe all of our comprehension. We did a show. If you missed it, go back and listen to it. It's probably one of the best episodes of Travel Stories about how myself, TK, Trevor, and our friend Jeff, who's not here, went on a round-the-world trip on a LATAM ticket for $3,700, flew 40,000 miles in 10 days, and had a great time. Now, for my 40th...
And that is episode 8, by the way. So we're 50. That was 42 episodes ago.
Wow, was it that long ago?
I remember that episode. It is ingrained in my memory because it was such a great episode.
See, that's how good it is. Now, for my 40th birthday, my wife basically told me that I could leave her and go any ridiculous long weekend trip that I want. We have a group text going for the last, I don't know, month, and we can't even seem to come up with a place to go. So I would love if somebody's got some kind of like real interesting freedom route, you know, DM one of us, or I don't know, just a weird flight we could take or something we hadn't thought of. You know, you should know Trevor and TK by now. They're flight dorks. We need to turn it into a travel story, obviously. So, like, you know, just message some weird ideas. I don't know, because we're just, you know, I suggested Greenland. Everyone was real bored by that idea. You know, we've thrown around Bhutan a few.
No. We were told Bhutan and Greenland are not allowed because of because of someone. And then you threw out Brunei. Which I find interesting, but it's a little hard to get to.
I think Brunei is totally doable, by the way. I've been including that in my research, but okay. Yeah, no, I haven't found the magic bullet yet.
Well, I just think,
definitely,
you know,
haven't found an end over end fair or anything.
Crowdsourcing.
So
we're going to crowdsource this. Crowdsourcing the next travel story, the next guy's trip travel story. I love that idea, Joey. Great job in leveraging a little bit of a speakerphone, so to speak, or whatever they call the loud speaker. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I would love to hear listeners' suggestions for low cost or high value paid business class routes in the world that we need to keep on our list. I already have a couple of them in my mind, but you know, piecing together the puzzle is getting increasingly more difficult, I think. And, you know, it doesn't help that I'm getting older too. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that anymore.
Yes. Now we travel for luxury.
I know. A lot of my plans involve some Royal Jordanian and Saudia and some other ones that may or may not be the best flying experience. But hey, it might make a great travel stories episode.
There we probably. Go. Please, you know, share in the comments. You can direct message me on Twitter. You can direct message Joey on probably what, Instagram or sure. TK. Where do you get your direct messages?
Oh, I'm everywhere. I just nobody knows it.
He's just silent.
I was about to say, but what do you actually check?
Probably Facebook. So if you're a friend of mine, or, you know, reach out to me on Facebook if you. Although, good luck finding Thomas Kim.
Yeah. I mean, I think message me or Trevor. Maybe is the best advice.
Yeah. We have here. And for the members of the Myelinomics Slack community, the Slack is the easiest way to get to me.
That's probably the easiest for those on Myelinomics. So that's probably the best way to reach us.
Perfect. I need to get into Myelinomics Slack. It's like always on my list. I'm going to make it happen. Especially, I feel that I'm obliged now that I've been on 8% of the shows. So I need to make that happen for sure. Yeah.
There you go. Yes. Yes. Join.
Make an official part of the community.
Jump to the light side.
I will.
Or the dark side, whatever you want to call it.
Awesome. So real quick, it is Travel Bros Pod everywhere on social media. So easy to find. Like I said, it's mostly Cash Hotel folk, but please give us a follow. I'd love to have you.
I'm glad it wasn't Passport Bros.
Oh, well, you know, unfortunately for like the first 3 weeks we were on YouTube, if you typed in Travel Bros Pod, there hadn't been enough like content and all you would get is Passport Bro content. And I was like, man, maybe we did not think this name through.
For our listeners, Passport Bros, I guess, indicates a certain kind of bro that is looking for love throughout the world. But anyway.
The things you learn on this podcast. I did not know that either.
We're really getting off the rails here in our after hours chat.
That's a good way. This might be a good way to end the episode, though.
I'm thinking so. So any other places they can find you or any other?
Not Passport Bros.
Yeah.
Just not Passport Bros.
Travel Bros Pod. I run all the social media. So if you send anything my way or give us a follow, I'll give you a shout for sure. And I appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Joey. We really appreciate you coming on, especially for the 50th episode, episode L. Also want to send just a sincere thank you to all of our listeners. These 50 episodes, as hopefully you can tell, they are a labor of love for us. Tom and I enjoy doing these. We enjoy the prep. We enjoy the travel that we have to do in order to be able to talk about it, to be able to share it with all of you, you know, on a regular basis is truly a joy and a privilege. And so we really appreciate all of you listening through what is probably somewhere between 60 and 100 hours of us talking about travel, miles and points and probably random other topics.
I'm surprised they haven't gotten sick of us yet. And, you know, surprisingly, we get some warm notes and some notes of encouragement from the listeners. And it's really very, it does generate a nice warm feeling in my heart that people actually appreciate the labor of love that we're putting into this podcast. So really appreciate everybody's positive feedback and telling us how much you enjoy listening to this. So we definitely appreciate the comments and please keep them coming.
So well said, Tom. So well said. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you enjoyed the episode, consider becoming a Myelinomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
A Patreon member like Joey's going to become.
Yes, I'm going to become one before you watch this episode, guaranteed. Until then, hope your next story is a travel story.